So welcome everyone to the free private teleseminar for students of our warm email prospecting program, 7 proven ways to land work from current and past clients using warm emails. Before we get started, I want to cover some really quick housekeeping items. If you haven't done so already, make sure you've downloaded the handout for the call. You'll find the link in the email that you received this morning, or just above the audio player on the page that you're looking at. You can right-click that link or command-click, and you can either print it out or view it while and follow along. This class will be available for replay by tomorrow afternoon, and you'll find the recording for today's call when you log in to the member dashboard at warmemailprospecting.com/login. Just go to bonuses, and the replay and handout for this call will be in a folder on that page. So with those couple of things out of the way, I'd like to now turn the call over to our host, Ed Gandia.
Thanks, Crystal, and thanks, everyone, for joining us today. Got some great material to share with you today, some ways that you can use the techniques that you've been learning in a more creative way to reach out to existing and past and dormant clients. So warm email prospecting is obviously designed to teach you how to reach out to prospects who don't know you. That's the whole point behind warm email prospecting. And I show you how to do that with very short, relevant, and personalized email messages. And it's a great way. It's to reach out to these clients. One of the ways that I think is working the best today, one of the quickest and most cost-effective ways to get it done. But there's another way that I've used warm emails to land work, and that's by reaching out to current and past and dormant clients. And at first, that might sound a little contradictory because some of you might be thinking, well, what's the point of doing that? Why would this approach be any different than just emailing the client to see if you can somehow help them, which is how most people do it? But just like you have to do email prospecting the right way when you're approaching people who don't know you, you also have to do email prospecting correctly with clients you've worked with before. And as you'll see in the next 40, 45 minutes or so, it can make all the difference in the world in the way you do it. And the great thing about approaching current and past clients for project opportunities is that these people already know you. They already trust you. So that obstacle is out of the way, which means you can often go from having zero work in your schedule to being book solid in just a matter of hours. So even though that can happen sometimes with, with a prospect who's never heard of you, but there's still a barrier that you have to cross. There's still some dialogue, and they have to feel comfortable about you before they award you the project. And that could take, a few days. It could take a few weeks. It could take a few months. But my experience has been that when you do and use some of the techniques that I'm about to show you with people who already know and trust you, you can go from zero to a project in a matter of minutes. And I'm not exaggerating. The stuff I'm going to share with you today is stuff I've actually used, and I still use today. And last count, and I stopped counting, but I did a rough estimate on projects and work that I've landed as a result of these techniques, and it's well over $60,000 in extra income over the last 3 years, just from applying what I'm about to show you. Now, as I've mentioned and alluded to already, the key to success with these strategies is how you approach these clients. So simply asking or begging for work is not going to cut it. I mean, if anything, that's just going to repel even your biggest fans. So you need to uncover opportunities through the use of smart and ethical techniques. And these techniques, I will tell you that they may not sound very revolutionary or innovative on the surface, but I guarantee you that most of your clients don't get approached this way very often. So make sure to try some of these out by yourself, give them a chance, and you'll see how powerful they can be. Now, before we get into the details, it's essential that you understand the psychology behind many of these ideas, because even the slightest deviations in how you use them can really alter their effectiveness. So first, let's talk about what most people do. So following up with their clients to see if there are any work opportunities on the horizon or anything current right now they can help them with, most freelancers resort to what I call the just checking approach. And the calls and emails go something like this. hey, Bill, Pam Stevens here, checking to see if you have any projects coming up that I can help you with. That probably sounds familiar with many of us. We've seen it. We've been on the receiving end. We've actually used that approach before. It's okay to admit it. I've done it. And that's okay, but there are several problems with this approach. The biggest one is that it implies that you have a need and you need the client to help you out. There's no implied value for the client. You're offering no reason as to why you'd like to have the work. And that's a big mistake because research has shown that in many cases, offering even the simplest reason for your request, for your outreach, will dramatically increase your chances of success. There's a fascinating book out there called Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion, and it was written by Dr. Robert Cialdini. His last name is spelled C-I-A-L-D, as in David, I-N, as in Nancy, I, Cialdini. And if you don't already own a copy, I strongly suggest you grab one. It's a fantastic book. It's fascinating. And in this book, Cialdini cites an experiment that was conducted by a social psychologist from Harvard. Her name is Ellen Langer. And in this experiment, Dr. Langer approached people who were waiting in line to use a copy machine at a library, and her request is very simple. She said, excuse me, I have 5 pages. May I use the Xerox machine? What happened was 60% of those in line agreed to let her cut in. And, you know, that's probably not a surprising result. I mean, there are people in line. She says, go in, excuse me, I have some copies I have to make. May I use the machine? Langer then tried a different approach. So she repeated the question to other groups, but this time she added a reason for her request. And here's what she asked. She said, excuse me, I have 5 pages. May I use a Xerox machine because I'm in a rush? Now, here's the shocking part. 94% of those whom she asked let her skip ahead of them in line when she offered that basic lame reason. And at first glance, it might appear that the quality of the justification, because I'm in a rush, made all the difference. But, I mean, let's face it here. That's not a great reason. And she was wondering what was really going on in here. So she tried it again with a third group of people. And then she modified the question. She said, excuse me, I have 5 pages. May I use a Xerox machine because I have to make some copies? So if you thought the other reason was pretty lame because I'm in a rush, I mean, isn't everyone, right? This one is even worse because I have to make some copies. You think, okay, well, now it's going to go back down, right? Well, no, it didn't go back down. And that variation of the experiment, 93% of those in line complied, even though there was no real reason, no valid justification. She just said, because of this. So that was only 1 percentage point less than when she had used the other excuse, which was a little better, when she said she was in a rush. So what was the key to getting compliance? It was the word because. In this book, Cialdini explains that the word because, or even offering a reason for your request, triggers a mechanical response in most people. And that's an extremely important lesson. It's something you need to be aware of. So as I go through these techniques, just keep in mind that offering justification is a key component of successful email prospecting with past and existing clients. So I wanted to give you that background because it's extremely important, and it's going to make much more sense to why these ideas, why these techniques are so effective, even though they're very simple. All right, so let's go through them. And, yes, if you have the handout, I think it would be very helpful to go through this with me, with a handout in front of you. If you haven't downloaded, make sure to download it. It's right here on that page where we're holding this class. And if you're listening to the replay, it's going to be here on the same page where you grab the audio download. So all these techniques are listed here, and some of the key terms, some of the scripts that I'll go through are listed there. That way you don't have to rush to write some of this down. All right, technique number one is called going on vacation. I have some very creative names for these, as you can tell. So this is an extremely effective technique and can have the extra benefit of generating enough income to help pay for your next vacation or holiday. It can also help you have a more enjoyable time off and a better time adjusting when you do come back. To explain what it's all about, let me just tell you the story of how I discovered it. A few years ago, I decided to take 2 weeks off in July. And rather than wait until early July to tell my clients, because I think I was leaving mid to late July, and rather than wait a couple of weeks until a couple of weeks before I was leaving to contact my clients and letting them know that I wouldn't be available later that month, I contacted all of them in early May. So I gave them plenty of notice. And I encouraged them to look at their project queues and to see if I could get started on something. Now, to be honest, I wasn't expecting much out of this effort. Really, my motivation was just to avoid the stress of coming back home to a long list of project-related emails and a bunch of urgent requests. I had never taken that much time off at once as a freelancer, and I was a little nervous about what I could expect. So just by reaching out to my clients, my current clients, that far ahead, something interesting happened. Two of my clients emailed me back and asked if I could start on some work immediately. Again, this is May. This is a couple of months before I was leaving. And it turns out that they had a few things that they had been putting off. And rather than wait until the last minute, they figured this would be a good opportunity to get the project started while I was still around and available. The end result was that I landed about $5,000 worth of projects in a matter of days. And that was nice because it filled my gap, in the current gap that I had in my schedule. And then it helped me avoid the stress of dealing with new project requests right before I was leaving town. And if you've ever been in that situation, many of us have, it's pretty stressful. The other nice thing is that the extra cash came in very handy while I was away enjoying my time off in Lake Tahoe. And, of course, my clients benefited by getting the work done on time. So it was a win-win all the way around. Now, you have to be careful and you have to be ethical when you use this tactic. You don't want to make up a story if you're not really leaving town, if you're not really going anywhere or taking time off. So obviously use this only when you're scheduled to be away on vacation, when you're planning that vacation time. Also, you need to plan ahead. So again, calling 10 days before you leave is too short a notice. So you want to contact clients 30 to 60 days before your trip, or even sooner if your typical projects take a long time to complete. So let me give you an example. And for all these, I'm going to have one or two examples for you. And these are in your handout. Most of them are. What would a warm email script look like for this situation? So here's an example. The subject line reads, upcoming vacation, and the body of the email says, hi, Don. Just a heads up that I'm going to be out of town on vacation from July 1st through July 16th. I know you had mentioned that you had a few projects you were planning on starting soon. If you're ready to jump on those before I leave, I'd be happy to put them in the schedule. If not, that's fine too. Just thought I'd let you know that I'd be away at that time. Please let me know either way when you get a minute. Thanks, Ed. Simple to the point, 88 words total. Here's another variation on the script. Hi, Don. Quick note to let you know that I'm going on vacation from 7:19 to 7:29, and I have some availability between now and then if you have anything you'd like for me to work on. You had mentioned a work order and service brochure in the email below. Hope you're doing well. And by the way, this email I just read, that was the actual email that woke me up to the effectiveness of this approach. I copied and pasted it directly into my notes. And basically what I did is I took an email that the client had sent me regarding some projects he was considering, and it was, probably about a month prior to when I sent it. So I found the email, and I forwarded back to him with that script that I just read. That way he could reference what I was talking about, and it would jog his memory. And it worked out beautifully. So if you're planning something, if you're planning to go out of town, if you're planning on leaving, this is a great excuse. This is a great reason to reach out. Again, you're providing justification. So let's keep that in mind, and I'll be bringing that up again and again. All right, technique number two, the delayed project. So have you ever had a client award you a really large project or ask you to block off a few weeks in your schedule or a month for a major assignment, and then they put it all on hold at the last minute? If you've ever been in that situation, it's pretty frustrating. And, you know, it doesn't have to be. I found that a big unexpected opening in your schedule can give you a great reason to contact other current and past clients. In fact, every time this happens to me, rather than let that availability go to waste, I will immediately contact another client. I'll explain the gap in my schedule, I'll explain why it happened, and then just simply ask if I can help them complete a project that they have in their queue. So how did this come about? Well, a couple years ago, I had a longtime client award me 3 large projects, but then they put them on hold just a few days before I was scheduled to start working on them. And, I mean, I freaked out. My immediate reaction was to go into panic mode, and then once I relaxed, I realized, you know, let me see if I can fill this gap somehow. So I contacted 2 other clients, and within a few hours, I had filled more than half of that gap. A couple of weeks later, I filled the rest of the gap. And while I was wrapping up that newly found work, the original client came back to me with those 3 large projects and was ready to get started on them. So let me give you an example of a warm email script for this technique. Subject line, I'm available next week. The body reads, "Hi, Lisa. I was about to start working on a large project with another client, but it just got put on hold for at least a month. So basically, I have a big slot in my schedule. I know you had mentioned some case studies you needed to get written soon. I'd be happy to jump on those if the timing is right for you. Just let me know either way if you don't mind. That way, I won't let that opening go to waste." Notice here again that I'm providing that reason, that justification for my request. And also notice the conversational voice, the calm and professional tone. You want to avoid coming across as desperate or anxious, even though you might be kind of in panic mode. Try not to sound that way. And you want to show the client what's in it for them, which in this case is to be able to get a project out of the way sooner than expected. So don't underestimate the value or the potential value of this technique. As long as you use it professionally, as long as you stay calm, keep it short, conversational, and in a relaxed tone and approach, it could be very effective. It will never be perceived as a desperate attempt to land work. Technique number 3, help your clients plan ahead. So here's the thing. Clients are super busy. In fact, most clients, especially in the corporate world right now, and small businesses even, they've never been this busy. They're stretched very thin. And it's only gotten worse over the last few years. There have been more layoffs and downsizing, and you have fewer people trying to do the work of many. And that partly explains why so many of us, or so many of them, come to us with last minute, you know, "I need this yesterday" type requests. It's not so much that they're poor planners. It's just that many of them have way too many plates in the air. As a freelancer, you can take some of this burden off your client's shoulders by helping them plan better. So, for instance, if you know that a client's busy season is coming up soon, why not reach out to them and see how they're planning to tackle the work and see if you can help them with some preliminary steps or some preliminary work? Or let's say that you're a graphic designer and you know that one of your clients will soon be going through a major rebranding effort. If you know that you're about to have a few weeks of idle time, why not discuss this availability to see if you can start working on some initial tasks for that branding project? Or maybe you're a writer and you have a client who usually hires you to write a white paper about every quarter or so. Well, you can mention your upcoming availability and see if you can start work on the next piece a few weeks sooner than planned. In my case, fall tends to be the busy season for many of my clients. And a couple years ago, I was a bit light on work coming out of the summer season, so I contacted this client in August to see if I could get a better idea of what they had coming up and when they might need my services. My reason for asking was basically that I was trying to plan ahead for what is also my own busiest time of year, and it really is. I mean, again, many of my clients are really slammed in the fall. Well, that inquiry triggered a discussion about a couple of specific projects, one of which we realized we needed to start on right away, and it was a really nice $1,500 project that I probably would have seen for several weeks had I not approached them earlier. Again, it's critical to be honest when you use these techniques. The idea is not to manufacture something. It's not true or not based on honesty. Not only is that unethical, but it's also going to come across as a bunch of baloney. So, you know, don't try it. Just be honest, be sincere, but provide that valid justification. That leads me to another important point. When approaching clients with these questions and proposals, you have to sound confident and professional. And I think that's kind of coming across in some of these examples, but I do want to emphasize that. You don't want to come across as if you're scared or as if you need some work from them in order to make the next mortgage payment. Remind yourself that you're not asking for charity here. You're bringing good ideas and excellent service and value to the table, to the client. And you're helping them make their jobs easier. So don't underestimate the value you bring in the service that you bring to them. They'll appreciate your efforts and your reaching out to them. In fact, I just did this yesterday with a client, and I just basically said, hey, I'm planning January, and I wanted to get an idea of what you got coming up. Last time we talked, you mentioned you had a few things that you were working on, that you were thinking about, and I'm already starting a schedule for January. So if it makes sense, would love to chat with you about that. I got a response within an hour. And he said, you know what, I actually have an immediate need for a white paper. It's on this topic. I will get you more details very soon. But, yes, thanks for reaching out. So this happened yesterday. I might start on something right after Christmas, and it's a great way to start the year. Now, he probably was going to reach out to me anyway, but, it could have been when he now needed it in a pinch, which would have been stressful for him, stressful for me. So I just basically was able to kind of pluck that out of his queue and bring it forward. So let's look at an example of an email script you could use here. The subject line in this example reads, "Should we plan ahead?" "Hi, Angela. I know fall is your busiest season. It's mine as well. So I thought I'd reach out and see if I could get a better idea of what you're planning from a content development standpoint, and when you might need my help. Just trying to plan ahead so I can be there for you when you need me." So again, very similar to the example that I just gave you from my client yesterday. A couple of things. Notice the tone. This is a fictitious example, but I wrote it in my own voice. So write it in your own voice. Be yourself. The style. It's short, sweet, to the point. I mean, this thing is probably 50, 60 words. No hidden agenda. So you're clear about what you're asking. And very simple and straightforward without coming across as begging for work. So there's nothing desperate about this. I'm not padding it with a bunch of fluff. I got right to the point. It was clear, professional, and this will get a response. It doesn't necessarily mean it'll get a response with work, but it will get some sort of reaction. Technique number four, take advantage of trigger events. So as you've learned from the Warm Email Prospecting Program, trigger events can be extremely powerful. But I'm going to show you how to use them a little differently with clients rather than with prospects. And the principles are basically the same. So just a refresher in terms of what trigger events are. We're talking about events, either big events or a change within an organization or in that organization's industry that creates an opportunity for you as the freelancer to either get your foot in the door, or if you're already working with that organization, to contact them about how you could potentially help them. So trigger event examples, and there are literally dozens of these, and many of them you can kind of make up if you can kind of make it a trigger event. Maybe they're not thinking about it as a trigger. Positive or negative financial announcements. New funding received, new product or service announcements, expansions into new markets, new initiatives within the organization, a new manager or director in the department that you usually call on or work with, new activity on their website or their blog, or a lack of activity, an upcoming event the prospect is putting together or going to be attending, pending or recently enacted legislation, landing a very large or prestigious new client. And here is a great one in fact, I just thought about this the other day because it's something that I often use, year-end. So a lot of departments are trying to use up whatever remaining budget they have because they'll lose it. So contacting them towards the year-end, and if you're listening to this right now in December, it's not too late to reach out to some of your clients. They're trying to use some of their unused budget. Can be very effective. Now, don't think that, well, it's too late because, you know, there's no way I can submit a project, start on a project and submit it by December 31st. You don't have to do that. I can't tell you how many times I've tried this. I've reached out to my clients at the end of the year with a week, 10 days before the end. And in order to use it, what they do is they ask me to pre-invoice them. So I'll pre-invoice. Well, of course, we'll talk about the project. I'll quote it. I pre-invoice, and they go ahead and get it into the accounts payable system. And, I mean, sometimes I'll get a check even before the end of the year, but many times it's in January. The point is they need to go ahead and get it in the system. So that, in many cases, will do it. So going back to trigger events, the reason they're so important is that they create that certain level of pain or need that makes that organization much more receptive to your services, as in the example I just gave you. So I use trigger events to contact clients and prospects about opportunities for me to help them. And one recent example was with legislation that was passed. So a couple years ago, the U.S. government enacted food safety legislation that involved better tracking of food ingredients and their origin. And one of my clients sells software that helps food companies do this more efficiently. So I approached my client about writing a series of articles on that subject. They really liked some of my ideas, and they hired me to write those pieces, which put several thousand dollars in my pocket in just a few weeks. Another great example of someone who uses trigger events to find opportunities is a freelance developer and software pro by the name of Jeremy Schultz. This is someone I interviewed a couple of years ago. He's also a graphic designer, and he specializes in design and illustration for print and the web. And one of his differentiators is that he's a beta tester for Adobe software, which means that he's part of a team of users who test new software for Adobe and provides Adobe with feedback on the new releases. The main advantage for him of being a beta tester is that when he gets to use Adobe's new software months in advance, months before it comes out to the general public, which means that he can sell training and consulting for new Adobe products and releases in advance of the competition because he's already up to speed on it. He knows everything about it. So as soon as it's released, actually, he can start marketing it before it's even released. And he can also market himself as a top Adobe expert in Iowa, which is where he lives, which is a big differentiator to many of his local clients. The kicker also is that every time Adobe upgrades or updates some of their products, he can use that as a trigger event to develop new service packages for his clients. So when I interviewed him a couple years ago, Adobe had just released or was about to release Creative Suite 5, CS5, and he began marketing two CS5 consulting packages for companies looking to upgrade. And he figured that, hey, companies considering that upgrade should benefit from his input as a creative professional who is not only a great designer but also knows CS5 better than anyone in the area. And he was right. Basically, that move led to a number of client engagements and opportunities, all because he took advantage of a great trigger event, which was that upcoming CS5 release. I mean, so you can take this example in many different ways. You can kind of start thinking of some ideas of your own. The possibilities are really endless. It's really up to your imagination. So let me give you an example from when I approached that client with a couple of story ideas for that new legislation. So the subject line read, article ideas based on FSMA. Hi, Jim. The recently passed FSMA gives us a ton of potential angles on why food and beverage companies can no longer sit on the sidelines when it comes to track and trace technology. Here's just one idea based on this article. And I've included a URL of an article I found. This angle is different because it talks about traceability, supply chain info as a competitive advantage at the consumer level, rather than as a way to enable regulatory compliance or brand protection. With so many consumers into sustainable, green living, organics, fair trade, local foods, etc., this is certainly becoming a hot topic. And since the business is so competitive, retailers are using this to get an edge. Anyway, I'd love to discuss some article ideas sometime next week, if you're interested. The time to get these out to the media is now, while the topic is hot and top of mind. So notice that this particular script is a little longer than most of my other ones. It doesn't necessarily need to be, but because of what I was proposing, I felt that I needed to provide a bit more detail. And it worked. That's exact same script I use. I changed the name of the person that they got me that work. So this is, again, stuff that I use. Again, your particular email could vary greatly based on the specific trigger event you're using, but the principles remain the same. I mean, you got to get to the point quickly. You got to be relevant. Use solid trigger events only. Don't stretch it. I mean, don't try to use something that's just kind of lame and it's not related to what you're about to talk to them about. Make sure that whatever you use, you can tie it to what you do or your particular service and tie it to that trigger event. Don't expect the client to figure it out. There's too much going on in their heads. You need to make that connection for them. All right, moving right along. Bring a hot idea to the table. So another great way to land more work is to approach them with a great idea. And I often find myself thinking about my clients' businesses while doing things like walking a dog or chopping vegetables or going on a hike. For me, it's just hard to turn it off sometimes. But, you know, some ideas just come to me at weird times. Or I'll read an article and it'll trigger something. And, you know, regardless of your profession, there's one thing I would say most clients value in a freelancer or a solopreneur or a service provider. It's knowing that someone truly cares about them and their job, if they're an employee or their business, if obviously they're an executive or entrepreneur. So if you can occasionally provide fresh ideas or approaches that will help them do a better job or improve their businesses or meet their objectives, you'll find yourself creating, if you will, new projects that didn't even exist before you contacted them. So at a minimum, if they don't go for your idea, you'll probably at least be the first person they contact on the next project. So let me give you a recent example of this. So this is late last year, I had come across a few software companies that had written ebooks on specific topics and use those ebooks in their offers and emails and direct mail campaigns. And it's always been very common for software companies to offer white papers in these types of campaigns, but I hadn't seen too many ebooks up until that point. I just thought it was different, it was cool, and it made it stand out. So after seeing a few of these, I thought of a client of mine who at one point had reached out to me about ghostwriting a business book for him. He's a thought leader in his industry. He wanted to put many of his ideas on the table into a physical book, which he could use as a lead-generating and credibility-building tool with prospects. Well, he never actually went through with the idea, but the whole ebook thing just got me thinking. So I decided to contact him about doing an ebook instead of a physical printed book. And in my reasoning, well, I gave him a couple of reasons. One is that it would stand out in an industry filled with white paper offers. So I thought, hey, if you could offer an ebook to your prospects, that's cool. It's memorable. It would also give him more room to discuss some of his more complex ideas, which can't really be discussed or fleshed out fully in a 5 to 8 page white paper. And then I told him, hey, this could be a stepping stone, the genesis, if you will, of your book whenever you get around to writing it. Now you have that stepping stone, and you have the seed for your longer book. Well, I mean, within a couple of hours, he emailed me back. He loved the idea, and he said, let's do this. And, you know, interestingly enough, I can tell you because it's been a while now, so now I can tell you how it all shook out. So we didn't end up writing the ebook, but it turned into 3 white paper projects. So we decided that it would be best to just really write 3 new white papers. It doesn't matter. The point is that I walked out of there with, I think it was over $10,000 worth of works, 3 short white papers that I created. These are things that probably wouldn't have happened had I not brought this idea to them. And so let me give you an example of what I – actually, this is the same exact script. I changed some of the names. But the subject line read, lead generation idea. Mike, here's a thought leadership and lead generation idea. Write a 5,000-word ebook. You can use it as a lead generation tool, a way to nurture longer-term leads, the basis for a presentation, etc. Plus, it can become the precursor for your printed book. I know you've wanted to write something for a while. Doing an ebook first could be a logical stepping stone, and it could make the process of writing the actual book easier. Plus, I know of a great writer who could help you do this. Just a thought. Hope you guys are doing well. That simple email triggered over $10,000 worth of work within a few months. All right, moving right along to technique number 6, spread the word about a new service offering. Yeah, I'm really surprised how few solo practitioners reach out to their prospects and clients individually every time they have a new service offering. You know, believe me, clients aren't out there surfing our websites every month to see what's new on our end. You have to tell them, and you have to tell them several times over the course of a few months. And the reason you need to have that repetition is because they're already getting hit left and right with marketing messages and new information. So you have to repeat the information for it to stick. Now, the key to doing this right is to contact each client personally and position the new service in a way that's relevant to them and their business, and in a way that sparks ideas on how they can take advantage of this expertise of yours, this new service. And that's something you rarely see freelancers do it that in the way that I just described, but it's the absolute best way to market a new service. So let me explain what I mean by giving you an email script example that illustrates my point. I think you'll quickly see the difference. The subject line reads, "Thought this would work well for you. Hi, Darcy. Not sure if I had mentioned this in a recent conversations, but I'm now writing white papers. I had an idea on a topic that could be very effective for you guys in terms of generating more and better quality leads. It has to do with the recent surge of iPad adoption in construction job sites. Anyway, you had mentioned a few months ago that you were looking for better ways to generate leads, and I think this could be a winner for you. Let me know if you'd like to discuss this idea further." So notice how I personalized this message and how relevant it is to her, to Darcy. Also notice how I tied it nicely to the challenges and objectives. And I can do that because I know this client. I know them well. I have a good relationship with them. So that allows me to craft a very personalized message that hits the target. Now, compare that to an email the approach that most people would use when they have a new service, which is something along the lines of, "Hey, Darcy, did you know that I'm now writing white papers? Do you happen to have any needs in that area?" You know, something along those lines. That's pretty lame. You're just throwing it out there and hoping that they'll bite, and, you know, you haven't put it in the right context. The other approach I often see is the freelancers will do a postcard campaign on this new service where they're included in their newsletter. "Hey, did you know I'm now doing this?" And then they try to entice their clients saying, "And, you know, for the first 5 clients, doing a 25% discount." I mean, all that is great, but you're throwing things at it that you hope will work, and you don't necessarily need to give a discount. Keep your prices where they should be, and then just think about each client and how they could benefit from this new service, and write a very relevant and personalized message to each. Does it take a little longer? Maybe, but maybe not. When you add up all the time you're going to waste, you know, on this postcard campaign and all the money you're going to waste, it might be better to just save all that and take your time putting together these individual messages. All right, so quick water break, guys. Hold on a second. All right. Excuse me. The technique number 7 is the loss leader strategy. Another idea is to add a loss leader to your service roster. And by loss leader, I mean entry-level services or service that is relatively low cost and low risk for the client. So here's how I got the idea for this. A few years ago, a colleague of mine was having difficulty landing enough website copywriting projects to make her income goals. Her average project was about $7,500, which is not necessarily a low price offering. And, of course, with high price comes the perception of higher risk on the client's part. So if the copy doesn't quite cut it for the client, they've just spent $7,500 that didn't give them the return they expected. So, you know, that's how clients, so many clients think, and it's a big jump for many of them in her case. So in order to lower her client's perceived risk of hiring her at that higher price level, she began offering a $500 website copy audit. Now, this new audit service included quite a few things. It included a thorough evaluation of the website structure, the client's copy, their message, search engine optimization, usability, and it included a full page of recommended changes or adjustments that they could make. She then detailed her findings and recommendations in a very attractive report that was easy to read, easy to understand. Clients loved it. And as a result, what she found is, you know, not only was she getting $500 for something that was kind of templatable, that it didn't take her that much time, but she found that she started getting hired to then implement those changes by a few clients. Not all of them would take her up on it. Not all of them would contact her to go to that next step, but many of them would. And sometimes even to rewrite the whole copy on their website. So the idea here is to take a look, or closer look, at your services and see where you can increase the chances of getting hired by offering a smaller or less comprehensive service that will then give clients a sampling of your expertise in how you work. Keep the fee low for the service. Keep it low enough for the right clients to take you up on it, and look at it as a cost of attracting good clients. Don't think of it as, oh, well, that's too cheap. No, it's a loss leader. It's supposed to be cheap. You're supposed to lose money on it. What you're trying to do is attract a number of clients, and you know that a certain percentage of them will probably turn into bigger clients. And had you not done this, you wouldn't have had those bigger projects that it led to. So let me give you an example. The subject line reads, low-cost way to improve your website. Hi, Deb. I know we've talked in the past about revamping your website, but I also know that cost is an issue. So I wanted to run an idea by you that I think will give you a lot of what you need for a fraction of the fee we discussed, my new website audit service. This package includes a thorough evaluation of the website structure, copy, message, search engine optimization, and usability, plus a full page of recommended changes or adjustments. You get all my detailed findings and recommendations in a very attractive report that's easy to read and understand. All this for just $500. Let me know if this sounds like something you'd like to discuss further. So a few key points. What made this work? Notice that the purpose of this email is to fish for interest. You're not trying to sell the client on the project through this email. You're just trying to determine if there is interest. Also, if she replies with any level of interest, you can then take the conversation to the phone, which is really where you want to sell this idea anyway. So you're just trying to get some sort of response and then trying to get on the phone. And just like with the previous few techniques we discussed, it's important to make your message relevant and personalized. So in this case, notice that I tied my offer to an initiative or objective I knew was important to this particular client. All right, technique number 8, and this is a bonus. So I promised 7, but I'm going to give you an 8th one, which is really, really cool. It's very effective. And this technique is, I call it chasing the mover. It's a combination of a few of the strategies that I've discussed in the Warm Email Prospecting Program and in this teleseminar, but it's kind of a unique combination, so I listed it separately. And I call it chasing the mover because it involves reaching out to someone you've worked with in the past who's now moved on to another organization. And the technique is very simple. All you have to do is look at your client contact list and search for names of individuals who are no longer at a company or at an organization. So you open your contact, you go one by one through your contact list and see where those people are, see if they're still there. And if you come across someone who's not there, use LinkedIn. In fact, you're probably going to use LinkedIn anyway to make sure they're still there. Use LinkedIn to see where they're working now. And then send them an email at this new organization with an idea. And then, of course, when you send that email, you got to remind them of what you do and who you are, just in case, and see if it's worth reconnecting. So let me give you an example. The subject line of this one reads, saw that you're now at Briscoe. Hi, Marcy. I just came across your name this morning and saw that you're now at Briscoe. Great to hear. Hope all is well with you and your family. Since we worked together at ABC Company, I've worked on a number of animated illustration projects for other training companies, including Fillmore, Ameritraining, KnowledgeWorks, and others. Here are some samples of that work. And includes a URL. Would it make sense to reconnect to see if I can help you at Briscoe? A few key points. You want to keep this to people you've actually worked with and people who are actually very happy with your work, and hopefully that's a lot of people. But this specific technique is intended for people you've had contact with, you worked with directly in the past. Also, just like all the scripts here, keep it brief. Don't try to warm up to them too much in the beginning. Get to the point as quickly as possible. Also, remind them of your expertise because they may have forgotten, and then provide some examples. So that's why I alluded, hey, we worked over here before. Remember, we worked on these kind within this project or on these projects. And then just to bookend that, I included some samples of my more recent work. And then, of course, at the end, offer to reconnect. Also, don't limit your outreach to the people who hired you directly in previous companies. So make sure to also contact others that you may have worked with in the project itself, but maybe they weren't the ones who hired you for the project. So an example of that would be when I was logged in LinkedIn the other day, I got one of those people you may know type messages there on the side to show you a list of people that you're not currently connected to, but you may actually know. And I found that LinkedIn is actually pretty accurate with this. Many times I look at those people and say, yeah, I do know those people. I can't believe I'm not connected to them. So one of those recommendations that it suggested was for a gentleman that I had worked with a few years back with one of my clients. Now, he wasn't the person who hired me for this project, but he's the one I worked with the most on a particular white paper project. And the reason I worked with him very closely on this is because he was a subject matter expert on this topic that I was writing about, and he's the one who provided me with most of the information for that white paper. Anyway, I saw that he had left that company, and when I saw the people you may know message in LinkedIn, and I saw that he was at another company that's not a client of mine, a company that I would love to work with someday. And I contacted him, and we had some dialogue. It didn't turn into a project, and I haven't followed up since then. It's been a few months. But, I actually didn't need the work at the time. I was just curious to see how it worked. But it really got pretty far, and we started talking about some specific things. I'm pretty confident had I kind of stayed in touch with him, and I need to do that soon, it could have turned into something. But, again, I wasn't really pursuing it too hard because I was pretty booked. The whole idea is just look around, take some time every few weeks, go through your contact list, look at LinkedIn, see if they're still there. If they're not, where are they? Is it someone you could possibly serve? And then reach out to them. You never know what could turn up from that outreach. So, that's pretty much what I wanted to cover today. I hope that the discussion here has given you some ideas on how you can use those simple, short, personalized emails to reach out to current and past clients. As you can see, there are plenty of ways to unearth hidden opportunities with these people, with these organizations, people who already know and trust you. The key is to do it in creative ways and to focus first on adding value to the client. I found that client-focused ideas, when you deliver them consistently and professionally, and when you back them with smart justification, and again, that's key, will go a long way to helping you land profitable work, or usually when you need it most. So that's it for the material today. And Crystal, why don't we open it up for questions if there are any?
Absolutely. Okay, so I have a couple of questions here started. And to submit your question, all you need to do is type it into that little black box on the page that you're looking at. Submit it, type your question in, put your name in so we know who you are. Press submit and it'll come to me. So while we're waiting for those of you who may have questions after the call here, I'll start with Heather. Are ebooks usually shorter than print books? You mentioned a 5,000 word ebook. Most of my print books have been 45,000 to 50,000 words.
Yeah, this is a little different. So what what they're doing, Heather, is they're taking a white paper and calling it an ebook. They've formatted a little differently. They've added some design elements, but it's a PDF, and they're just calling it something differently. It's a different way of positioning it and talking about it. And they are short. So these aren't, you know, full fiction books or business books that, you know, you download on your Kindle. These are PDF format, and they're essentially the equivalent of a 5 to 10 page white paper if you were to lay it out normally. I can give you an example of where I started seeing this a lot, and I think you'll get a really good idea of what I'm talking about. If you go to HubSpot.com and you look at their resources, you'll see a bunch of different ebooks that they offer for download for free. HubSpot, HubSpot. And you'll see what I mean. So it's really just a different term for a white paper. But because so few companies are using that term, it just really stands out. White papers just become kind of a blur sometimes in many industries. So I just thought it was cool. And I'm seeing more companies use it. So eventually it'll probably lose its effectiveness, the term itself. But, yeah, so these are a lot shorter than what you're talking about.
Okay, another question that we received, and you sort of covered this, but I know there's a little bit of difference here, from Michael. Since I'm new as a freelancer, a writer, any thoughts on these techniques on past clients from a previous life?
I actually think, Michael, that going back to past clients, so I'm assuming that you're talking about people you've worked with as an employee. So if you're a new freelancer, I'm assuming that you're talking, when you say past clients, you're talking about past employees, past coworkers. So if that's not it, please, you know, resubmit the question or, you know, maybe clarify a little bit. But if that's the case, I think that is one of the most underused prospecting strategies out there, is to go to people you've worked with in the past and with a short email like the ones I've just described. It could be very, very powerful. I started counting this the other day. My last employer got acquired right before I went full-time as a freelancer. And even though they wanted me to stay on, I just felt that was the time to make a clean break. So you can imagine this is 2006. I was working for a small company. They got acquired by a very large software company. I leave. Most other people stayed. But over the next couple of years, most of them ended up leaving little by little. And I started counting the other day. I want to say it was 5 to 6 people over the last few years have contacted me at various times from the different companies that they are now working in, and to see if I can help them with some content. And so it's been extremely profitable. Now, I will say not all of them contacted. Some of them I contacted directly, but most of them came to me. So they just knew. They knew that I had left to do this, and they knew that I was good. And I had maintained that relationship. You know, not a lot, but we stayed in touch via email, via social media, and they contacted me. So I think most people have a tremendous hidden value with past employers that they're not tapping into. There might be some personal reasons and some other reasons why they're not doing it, but and what I found is in many cases that it's just because they haven't thought of it.
Okay, that's all the questions that actually have been submitted. Is there anything else you wanted to cover, Ed? Comment on?
No, other than, you know, go through the handout's got a lot, and it's a good summary. Go through it. I encourage you guys to start. You know, just pick a couple of these that really resonate with you and make it a goal to start reaching out to past, current, or dormant clients with a couple of these ideas. And, you know, maybe make it a goal, hey, starting in January, I'm going to send 2 of these a week or 1 a week or whatever. The other idea might be, if you're listening to this live or still in December, reach out to some of these corporate clients, if you do work for corporate clients, about trying to use some of that budget money that they'll lose. It's, you know, you never know. And if you do it professionally, it won't sound desperate. And you might be surprised what you'll uncover and what you'll land.
Ed, just as a side note, I don't know what it's like in the United States, but I know here in Canada, I formerly worked for a government agency, and their year end is in March. So when I reached out to them as a freelancer, about their budget money. It was in the beginning of March when they were desperately trying to get rid of that money.
That's a great point, because it, you actually brought up something I hadn't thought about, which is many companies, their fiscal year end is not December. So it does help. In fact, I probably recommend this. If they're, especially if they're a public company, look up to see when their fiscal year end is. And that way, you know, you're not going out to them now and saying, hey, you want to use some you're trying to get rid of some budget money when it's not their year end. So that way you sound a lot better and smarter and you're getting it right. So great point, Crystal. And so that's, you know, that's kind of a combination trigger event, and, you know, doing your homework.
Okay, well, that's everything. We have all the questions. So if there's nothing else, Ed, I'll close out the call.
Yes, then nothing else. So thanks for listening, you guys, and good luck. And you know what? Shoot me a note. Let me know how this works for you. I'd love to, always love to hear from you guys on how these strategies are working, and maybe if you find a different twist to some of these ideas, love to hear that as well. So send us a note and keep us posted. Good luck.
And so that ends today's bonus teleseminar. Remember, the handout and the replay will be available at the member dashboard by tomorrow afternoon. So with all of that out of the way, thanks, everyone, and have a terrific day. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The moderator has left the conference.